Hello and welcome to the Beautiful Business Podcast, where today we have a very special episode for you. You might already know that the WOW company power Benchpress. Benchpress is a yearly benchmarking report designed for agencies to have insights into the industry. Each year, we have around 700 agencies take part, and we also host Benchpress Live, an event exclusively for 1 million plus agency owners to be the first to see the report. The day is packed with value, including roundtable discussions, a keynote speaker, and a panel discussion. This year, we amalgamated the Benchpress Live experience with the Beautiful Business Podcast to create a Beautiful Business panel, and our discussion and insights were all focused around people-centered businesses. I was delighted to be joined on the stage by Mo Candelau, author of The Inclusion Journey, creator at Watch This Space, and as I like to call her, our fountain of knowledge on all things DE&I. I was also joined by Kelly Goodship, MD at the WOW Company, who she's been with for almost 18 years. Kelly is passionate about people and client experience and setting an example to those around her to prioritise the right things in life and go beyond expectations. Finally, Nikki Gattenby joined us. Nikki has been on the podcast before and is well known for helping agency owners grow their businesses into highly valued assets. Author of Super Engaged and Better Business on Purpose, Nikki is just excellent at simplifying goals into measurable and achievable steps. To be graced by these three was a highlight of the year so far, and they just couldn't have been better company to talk about people-centered businesses at a time when technology is so prominent. Listen up as we dig into recruitment, metrics the team can buy into, and of course, the importance of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workplace. Hope you enjoy. Welcome to the Beautiful Business Podcast from the WOW Company. If you're searching for the right strategies, tools, and connections to ignite your thinking and elevate your business, then join us for a fortnightly dose of inspiration. Our guests range from industry-leading agencies and cutting-edge tech pioneers to motivational speakers and executives, all offering actionable insights to help you thrive in profit and purpose. So, whether you're a growing consultancy or an agency leader, this podcast is your source of knowledge and encouragement to spark meaningful change in your business and beyond. So, without further ado, I'd like to welcome our panel here today, Mo, Kelly, Nikki. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining. I'm just wondering, what were the Benchpress stats that really stood out to you today? I know you kind of alluded to one there, Nikki, but Mo, I'm going to come straight to you. What really jumped out at you from the report?
So many things jumped out at me just in terms of running our own business, in terms of like what we're doing, measuring profitability, those kinds of things. There was a stat that concerned me around purpose and purpose-driven, and that was interesting because the reason for having a purpose that you talk about on a purpose-driven business is people want to work in those organizations. So what I found interesting about that is how is that going to translate into recruitment and retention? Because people look for a purpose. They want to feel like what they're doing every day contributes to something that they believe in. So in terms of diversity and inclusion, it's something like 58% of people look for diversity and inclusion in the employer that they're going to work for because they want to feel like that organization is going to value them. So that was the interesting bit. And often when there's times of economic crisis, those are the kinds of things that can slip, but actually they're the things to focus on because you need people to deliver for your business.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Anyone else?
Well, I had a bit of insider info in advance of today. I think for me, there was a couple of bits. One was the whole London thing. And like, I was surprised by that. And I know from chatting to a lot of the advisors at WOW, like they were surprised by that as well. So yeah, that was a big thing. And I think secondly, it's like the confidence figure. Like, I'm a firm believer in that we need confidence to be able to do everything in life. You know, if you've got confidence, like you can achieve anything you want. And I think when that number's down, like that's a challenge. And I think I liked Pete's mindset piece around, you know, we're choosing how we turn up, and I think that's a big thing for us to pay attention to.
I agree.
And I think the whole profitability opportunity is immense. I know a lot of the figures were going down in the wrong direction, but there is an opportunity to be way above the average. And AI is inextricably linked into that. And I think we are in that point of time where we could get it quite wrong, but actually there's a lot of evidence of it being very right. And there's a lot of use cases of it being very right. And I think we need to share more. We've kind of opened the Pandora's box on AI, but there's plenty of opportunity not to give away all the value to clients, but actually create more value to clients through AI. And I think that's massive. I'd like to be able to capture the value of that going forward.
Lovely. Thank you. I agree with all of those points. It all really stood out for me. Mo, what you just said about people kind of wanting to have that purpose feels like we don't just want to be cogs in a machine anymore, right? We want to zoom out. We want to see the bigger picture. And I'm really keen to understand how we can inspire that motivation and productivity within the team in order to help build the kind of the profitable and sustainable business. Kelly, I want to come to you first with this one, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course. Look, I think it's a few things. I think firstly, and I've definitely made this mistake in the last couple of years and I haven't got it right, but it's about being really clear on the vision and the purpose and where you want to go. And I think I've always felt like I'm really clear on that, but not really communicated that very well. And not just communicate it, but just keep on communicating it and keep on talking about it. And I think if we're really clear on that, it's so much easier to bring people along with us on that journey of profitability. I think communication's another one. Like whenever I see a mistake at WOW, almost certainly at the heart of that is a communication issue. You know, either internally, we've not communicated correctly, we've not communicated with the client. So I think there's a big thing around getting that communication right and picking that up. And I think lastly, maybe just being open to those conversations with the team. And I want the WOW team to come and talk to me. I want them to tell me when things aren't right, when things aren't working. And the same with clients. And I think the more you have those open conversations, the more quicker you can put things right. And the quicker you put things right, the profitability is going to speak for itself, isn't it?
Can I just jump in there? I'm a massive fan of, massive fan of this book. Has everyone seen this book, Vivid Vision? It's quite a short book. It's by a guy called Cameron Herold. And he talks about creating your vision in a way that other people can feel magnetized towards it. Every client I work with has a vivid vision, and it's incredible how much difference it makes to their business. To your point, and being clear about where you're going and be able to repeat that vision to everyone in a way that people can see what their part of that vision is and how they can affect it. So if there's another thing to add to your to-do list, I'd highly recommend getting the book by Cameron Herold. Now, I don't know how you feel about this because it's quite controversial right now, but Cameron Herold was Elon Musk's coach when Tesla first came to market. Now, Tesla wasn't the only electric vehicle company on the planet, but it was the most well-known one. And I believe it's a lot to do with the fact that Cameron asked Elon to publish his vision about electric vehicles and moving away from the mine and burn economy to electric. And it's shown how powerful it can be to communicate where you're headed. Now, Elon aside at the moment, but I think it's really powerful for us to do the same because we want to have the right people in our businesses and then the intent to create the action to get the vision really working.
I think as well, like when you go to work tomorrow morning in the office on Zoom, whatever it might be, like ask your team, like, what is the vision? What are we trying to do? Where are we trying to go? And see how many of them will give you an answer, but give you the same answer. So that's one thing I struggled with, is not everyone was giving me exactly the same answer. I mean, we were broadly aligned, but it wasn't the same. And I think that's a big thing that will help with, massive.
Lovely. And Mo, I definitely want to come to you with something that you mentioned earlier as well. So DE&I, right? Your whole topic, this is probably a wildly generalized statement, but sometimes I get the impression that it can feel like a must-have rather than a strong kind of strategy to really help a business with all of, you know, profit and all the rest of it. Can you explain to us what is the commercial impact of getting DE&I right?
Yeah, so it's actually central to the whole organisation, and it's something that shouldn't be seen as a separate thing or like forms to fill in or a checkbox. It's actually about what you do. It's actually the whole process of how you work. And so I think that's where people go wrong with it, is thinking that it's some kind of compliance activity when it's actually about your whole purpose, strategy and everything you do. So it's thinking about how can you bring in very different kinds of people to your organization. Why does that matter? Why do you want to do that? So we work with a lot of tech companies. Tech's about innovation. You need new ideas to create new products, right? So if you're creating a product that you want to sell to the whole world, but you only include certain types of people in your organization, then you're going to miss reaching people. You're going to miss the ideas. You're going to miss all of those things. So that's an example of an area where it's actually central to what you do. And actually the things you were talking about too, the communication, how do you make sure you're reaching people? How do you make sure employees are feeling inspired to work for you and actually want to work for you? when you're making decisions, how do you know you're making decisions that you've where you've thought through all of the options and thought through all of the examples? And there's a kind of famous story that's used in a lot of books, actually, that it's often used as an example, and is Apple with the iPhone. So the first, it's not wasn't the first iteration of the iPhone. I think it was the second generation iPhone. They had a typical Apple launch, huge fanfare, probably in some fancy place like this. And that design must have gone through a lot of people. So it must have gone through leaders, engineering, software, marketing, you know, all kinds of people. But actually, when that product came to market, when they did their big announcement, the phone was too big for women's hands. And it was one of those moments where it was like, oh. And they very quickly, some people might remember this, they quickly had to come out with another iteration of the phone. Now, our use of mobile phones has changed. We're probably happier with bigger phones now. But it's such an example of why you actually need different kinds of people in an organization. And when I hear that story, I always think, oh, I bet there were people that said, but they weren't listened to. I bet there were people that have and they just weren't listened to. And so it's also not enough just to have people in your organization. You've got to listen to them. You've got to think of different ways of getting input from people, getting feedback from people, getting their ideas. Because if you do everything, for example, in a meeting where people jump up and say their ideas of what they think could happen, you might miss the contribution of someone who doesn't feel confident to speak up. And they could be the one with the million-dollar idea and you haven't enabled them to contribute. So that it's kind of, it crosses so many different areas, and it's about thinking about the options and thinking about the different perspectives. So it's the kind of thing a lot of boards do, is actually actively seek out the perspective that they don't have. And it comes onto recruitment as well. And with recruitment, who's the person you don't have that's going to bring extra things to your organization? That's what you're really looking for.
So I completely agree with you massively. I think one challenge we have at WOW is like almost that funnel, you know, like where do we get those people from? And I was talking to someone earlier, bizarrely, but do you have any tips? Like where do you attract those people from?
We get asked this a lot. In fact, I must plug this, my props, our book, The Inclusion Journey. And there's lots in there about that. But yeah, you have to look at everything you're doing around recruitment. So what are you saying about the company? How are you communicating about what you do? Where are you advertising? Where are you networking? What communities are you going to do that? Yeah, there's so many things you have to do. So sometimes we work with, or we're talking to companies, and the CEO will say, well, the thing is, they don't apply for our job. No, they just don't. And like, it's those people's fault. And it's not. It's actually,
so where do I get them from?
Yeah, what are you doing about reaching out to different people? Or are you just advertising the same places, asking the same people, and doing the same things?
Cool, thanks. Blaine, take note.
The other thing you mentioned there, and this isn't the first time I've heard this, but about trying to seek out those voices that you might not hear. What's a really easy way to do that?
So if that example of the product development example, if you're doing that, it's about having different ways of getting that input. So don't do everything in a meeting where it's like brainstorming and everybody's got to speak up. Have like one-to-one discussions. Talk to potential customers as well. You've got to do that too. But in terms of your employees, have, you know, one-to-one discussions, ways people could input, sort of by written communication, you know, conversations, like different ways of doing that. Team leaders having conversations in their meetings. During COVID, it was really interesting because there was research done on this by Zoom. They've done quite a lot of research on these things about who spoke in meetings and who actually didn't speak, but actually the fact that a lot of the discussion was going on in the chat. I don't know if you may have experienced that, where there's sometimes a whole other conversation going on in the chat of people who didn't feel they could speak up, but actually they had loads of ideas. It's just they didn't feel enabled to do that before they had that ability. So it's kind of thinking creatively about how to get those different responses.
We see that in Office Vibe at WOW all the time. I love it. So I think it's just, yeah, having those different tools and sometimes giving people the option to do it anonymously, I think really helps.
It feels like it covers those more neurodiverse angles as well. Like, you know, we've been talking about this at WOW, haven't we, Kelly? But being able to include those people that just behave and respond differently in different situations.
One more thing to add on that. The stats I've remembered from Zoom that they brought out during the pandemic was that in meetings, women are interrupted around 50% of the time, and it increases in online meetings. So other things you can do is, for example, have a kind of agreement amongst people in a meeting that if you see someone's been interrupted, bring the attention back to them actually, Nikki was saying something and we didn't listen to it. What was that? Because for some people, that might have been the first time they felt like speaking up. And then they just got interrupted and we missed what their idea was. So it takes work to really think about how to really encourage those different voices.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. Nikki, I want to come to you on something a little bit different now. So a lot of agency leaders, well, might not like the numbers, right? They might not like digging into them, but they certainly need to dig into them, right? And you and I had a conversation recently about action-oriented insights. I'd love for you to share with everybody here and whoever's listening about what that actually is and how people can really get buy-in from their team with it.
So there's a lot of numbers in our businesses, isn't there? And I think sometimes we can get overwhelmed. And if you put a P&L in front of someone, they may just go, that's an anathema to me. I don't understand what you're looking at. So one of the things is, can we get some lighthouse metrics in the business that people can really see where we're headed and their role, their action in influencing those numbers? This started when I started out in my career. I was working with Nissan. There's a car theme here. And Carl was going and bought the business for a dollar. It was about to go bust. And he put in place a Nissan 180 turnaround plan to turn the business around in 5 years. The one stood for 1 million car sales, 8% profit and zero debt. Everybody who touched that business had to align to one, two or three of those numbers. 1 million car sales, 8% profit, zero debt. And that was head office, the dealers, the people who made the parts, the agencies, the partners, everybody. Any piece of business you did had to have some of those numbers. Nissan turned around in 3 years, not five. And at the time, it was one of the most innovative car companies on the planet. They bought the Nissan Leaf, the mass-produced EV, to the market way before Tesla. And I think there's a lot of value in having that absolute clarity on what those lighthouse numbers are. And I took that into my business, into my last agency. And we had slightly less elegant, 190, 80, 70, 60, 50, but some numbers that everyone could remember. But more importantly, what they meant and what they could do about them. So this was 15 years ago. At the time, it was £100,000 revenue per person, 90% net promoter score from clients and ENPS from employees, 80% client retention, 70% utilization, 60 precious seats, didn't want to get too big, and 50% net profit. Now, all of those figures were in people's action reviews, their appraisals, how they were rewarded. And our business flew and we went global and we threw off enough cash to develop two SaaS technology products, not just one, but two, both now independently bigger than the agency itself. And every business has had that lightning approach to what are our key metrics? Because without them, it can get a bit of a mess. And people don't know which direction they're going in and you're not all aligning in the same way. With them, you start to get a lot of traction and a lot of emotion going forward in the right way, a lot of momentum. So as well as looking at the Vivid Vision book, what's your plan? What are your lighthouse numbers? Have you got lighthouse numbers that you use at the moment? I've got some clients in the room and many of us are working with those lighthouse numbers. And we've already had conversations about how it's changing the momentum in the business to focus on the right things. So again, another action to add to your list, but think about what your plan is to align to your vision and what your lighthouse numbers could be that everyone can understand. So they don't have to go into the depths of the P&L, but they can really make an impact on your business. So that action-oriented insight comes from very, very simple numbers that everyone can get behind.
That really feels like it simplifies the whole Vivid Vision anything anyway, right? Like being able to just attach it to a number. I know what I'm working towards. Everyone on board.
Yes.
Amazing. I have to ask as well, because, I mean, as leaders, it can feel, there's a lot of responsibility, right? It can feel overwhelming with the numbers. You've got the staff to worry about. You've got everything on your shoulders. And I'm really keen to understand how we get that good work-life balance when it sometimes feels impossible. So I believe that that comes from leadership. I think that that has to be instilled from the top, because you're not going to get the staff chilling out if the leaders are, you know, working 24 hours a day. So have we got any tips on how to balance that work and life conundrum? Kelly?
I've got two boys. Nikki and I just talked about it. Oscar is 9 and Harry is 6, plus a husband. So I've kind of got 3. And actually, like, having a balance is really tricky. But, you know, it starts at work. At WOW, we're a family-first organisation. We always have been, like, and the whole time I have this role, we always will be. You know, I feel like if I've got my ducks in a row, or as I saw online, sometimes people say squirrels, either one, you know, if I've got a bit of order, then I bring a better version of myself to work, you know, much more higher performing version. And I just think it's important. I think it's important for the team to see that family does come first, because I don't genuinely believe that there is anything more important in life. And family is obviously means different things to different people, but who are those important people in your world? And I think they need to come first. So I think, yeah, it starts with that family first vibe, and I'll always support the team wherever it is that they need to be, you know, I don't know, nativity, sports day, hospital appointments, whatever it is, it's where they should be. So yeah, I think that's a big, but I try really hard to have like organization. I'm not sure that my husband would feel the same, but like that order at home. So like, what are those important things that we need to be doing? Where do I need to be? You know, yesterday I was at Harry's football tournament. In Harry's little world, there is nothing more important this year than that football tournament, and that was where I needed to be. But I think by that organisation, it means that, you know, if I'm not at that event, then, you know, bring in Grandad the legend, Grandad's at the event, you know, whatever it might be. And I think it just allows that organisation. And for me to have an honest conversation with the kids, you know, the kids know that I work, they know why, they know that it's not just to pay the bills, it's because it's what I love and it's what I want to do, and I want them to grow up and to see that. So I just think that by having that conversation, I did say to Oscar a few weeks ago, I said to him, Oscar, can you help me out? Like, has mummy got this balance right? Do I have this balance between home and work? And we were in the car, which I don't know what it's like for girls, but with anyone else, with boys, it's the only time I get any information whatsoever. And from the back of the car, he said, oh, I think you spend too much time with us, if I'm honest. And I was like, it's a little bit brutal, but actually, I guess in a weird way, could I have possibly had a better answer? I don't know. But I think just to be able to have, I mean, I won't try it again for a while, but you know, that open conversation as well has helped me massively on that juggle.
And I think we need to have a bit of a paradigm shift about how, as agencies, we think about time. We've hamstrung ourselves with timesheets and billing by the hour and talking about time with clients and inputs. And actually, time being present in the office, time is finite, we know that. But we need to think about time in a different way. Or maybe not even think about time, think about outcomes. So you're talking about the outcomes you want. You want your happy kids. You want to have time and balance. But time as an input can be really challenging. And as an agency industry, we've kind of buggered ourselves a bit on time, because we need to be thinking slightly differently around it. And if we can think about working on the right things, getting to the right outcome, balance will come. But putting balance first, I think, can get in the way if we don't know how we're dealing with our time and the outcomes we're trying to hit in the long run.
Yeah. And I think it's about the team that you've got working with you as well. You know, like, to be challenged on how you are spending your time. Are you prioritizing the right things? Like, what are you choosing to do over something else? And I love that. Like, I love having that accountability, because quite often I will make the wrong choice otherwise. What's the easy option here?
And I was going to say, with all this talk of AI, if it's not giving us more time and more money, then why are we all obsessing? Surely we should be getting ourselves more time. So we try with our business to run it as we want businesses to run, because surely that was the point of doing what we do. So we took part in the trial for the 4-day week, and that's what we do now. So we work the 4-day week, and all of the data around that shows that actually people are more productive, they enjoy their work more when you work that model of the 4. There's actually international trials going on around it now. So that's, you know, that's a really interesting way of looking at it. And actually, as Nikki was saying, if instead of focusing on hours and the time people sit at a desk, if you focus on the outputs and like what it is you want to achieve, and if you could do that in less time, then surely that's what we want. And so before I did this, I had a corporate career in tech companies, big corporations, and I used to run the sales and marketing teams, but meant we were all out a lot because we were out seeing clients. And when I used to come back to the office in London, people used to say, yeah, thing is, your team, they're not always at their desks. And I was like, isn't that the point? Have you seen their sales figures? They've hit every target. That's why they're not at their desk. Because otherwise, you know, it's not about the time that you sit at a desk. It is about what is it you're trying to achieve.
But it's really weird, because we've been having this conversation for a long time, haven't we? Is that all about outcomes? Why can't we make the shift? Do we feel guilty? Why aren't we giving ourselves time back? I find that really fascinating. And I think it's a lot to do with motivation and intent and setting boundaries. You know, we're not taught that at school, are we? We're taught maths, not money. We're taught how to remember a book, not setting boundaries. There's certain ways we need to rewire ourselves so that we make the best of our time. And you're right, AI is going to force us to do that. Let's not just fill our time with more things to do. Let's release that and think about what we could do differently.
Excellent advice. And I want to carry on with this a little bit, kind of loosely linked. Over the last year, I'd say, my LinkedIn has just nonstop been back and forth about whether we should be remote, whether we should be hybrid, or whether we should be in the office. And I'm guessing from the giggles that I'm hearing that it's the same for a lot of other people as well. I want to hear your thoughts. Mo, I saw your microphone go straight up. You go for it.
Here you go.
So first of all, it's not going to be the same for everyone. We don't all have to do the same thing. What suits you, what suits your business, everyone is different. There are examples of companies that have never had an office. So if you know Zapier, the software company, they've never had an office. They've scaled to hundreds of people, but they have a great team culture. So you can do it. It's just that it's different management skills and different working skills if your team are working remotely. It's different if people are all in the office. It's very different if they're hybrid too, because you've got to have the two types of ways of engaging people and really creating that company culture. So I think the problem is that the debate is often driven by people. The debate if we must be in the office driven by people that own commercial properties or perhaps think this is how we've always done it and want control and are thinking about things in that way. And so that there's that side of the pool. And then there are people that have found the freedom through not having to be in the office, who want that life, want the time that they have get back from that. The office environment isn't comfortable for everyone. So when I think back to my corporate career, like the amount of bullying that went on in the work, in the office environment, it doesn't suit everyone. That obviously it's not all offices that are like that. But I think we're too polarized in how we talk about it and say that it has to be completely one or the other. And actually it's about what works for the company, what works for the people in it. You know, there's loads of great ideas. You can, if you are a remote company, but there are people working for you who like being around people, get them co-working space memberships, things like that. There's lots of creative ways to think about how you can have different ways of working. But again, the bigger thing is what we were just talking about. What's the output you want? What's the reason that you're all working, and how can you best achieve that?
That's great advice, Mo. But I've got to ask, what does it open a can of worms when you start thinking about what everyone in the business wants versus what you want? Like, is it a lot to juggle, or can we simplify it?
It depends how many people you're talking about in your organization. So if you've got lots of people, then I think the team running the business need to think about how they want to run it and what works best, rather than, you know, opening it completely up. But I think you have to think about what the output is again. What do you want? What's going to work? Have you got a premises that you need to think about? You know, you've already got that you need to fill because you've paid for it already. Do you need it? Are there different solutions? You know, what could you actually do about it? So we've got a client where they did have an office, but when the lease came to an end, they actually just took a smaller office in a co-working facility. So they've got their own space, but it's much smaller in a co-working building. And it's given them so much. They've like met different people. They've met clients through it. They've got very different things from just going with a different solution, but crucially it saved them so much money. It saved them like thousands a month by doing that. So it's just thinking of different ways of doing it, but also who needs to make those decisions.
Thank you. And Kelly, I spoke to an agency owner just yesterday who said that he's fully remote and he's hit this challenge of culture.
Yeah.
As WOW is fully remote, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's really difficult, right? Like we were all in the office before COVID. And I think one thing we struggled with massively was recruitment. You know, trying to recruit into the office in Andover was really hard. We opened that pool up. And I think for me, if we initially we need to get the right people in the team, because culture's a lot easier to manage when you've got the right people. We say it well, like, have you got the right people on the bus? Rory prefers cruise ship, whatever it might be. But, you know, have you got the right people in the team? And I think that helps. I love it because it's so much easier to build on the culture. But yeah, I said earlier we use Office Vibe, and it's a really good like temperature test. You know, have you got something not working right culturally? In which case you can like deal with it quickly, like nip it in the bud, find out why, have a conversation. Yeah, it's helped.
Great. And Nikki, I can't overlook you on this. What are your thoughts?
Talented people have choices. And I think we need to understand where the talent we want wants to be. But also before that, talent taking personal responsibility of how they're going to develop their own career. I don't know about anyone in this room, but I know when I first started out, it was amazing to be with loads of other inspirational people. I've got the most incredible network of really, really amazing professionals that I can now tap into at any moment in time. Taking myself into today, and if I was fully remote as a young person starting work, I don't think that would work out the same at all. I don't think I'd be as confident. I don't think my career would have gone in the trajectory it would. And if you haven't had that experience, you don't know what you're missing out on. So I think we need to go back to personal responsibility for our teams, for them to understand how they can shape their own career and then make choices. And the talented people, I believe, will make the right choices. So we can get quite paternal or maternal about making these choices for others. I quite like to put the responsibility in their hands and say, how are you going to develop your career? Let's work out how we can make that happen in the office, out of the office, hybrid, whatever. But you've got to own this, not us solve it all the time.
It's so true. Like, I see that, like, for WOW team, you know, like, even today, like, those of them that are so eager, like, they want to be here. And it's a really good example, right? The things that they learn, the relationships that they build. And I think just giving the team as many opportunities as you can when you are remote to going out and seeing other people, going to see clients, going to do that thing just to try and get a bit of balance. But to own that themselves, you know, I want to go and do that. And I love it. Like, those that ask, like, yeah, go, let's do it.
I was going to just say, isn't that propeller net? They have, I can't remember the phrase, but it's like work where best works for you, isn't it? So there are people that like going into the office and there are people that don't.
Well, they like the coffee shop. I love the coffee shop. People watch, eat cake, and no one bothers me. Yeah.
It's way too distracting for me. Okay, lovely. That was actually more balanced than I thought it was going to be, so thank you. Okay, so before we open the floor to questions, I'd love to ask for one piece of advice from each of you that will help everyone in the room, agency owners, agency leaders, to create a lasting impact on their profits, their people. If they had to start doing something tomorrow, what should they do? Nikki.
Be clear on your vivid vision and create those lighthouse metrics to help everyone help you deliver on it. Without them, it's hard to know where you're going because you can't see it.
For me, it's probably following on from a point that Pete made earlier around like the people that you've got in your team. I don't know, add to your list, but I challenge you tomorrow, like join your call, go into the office, get a decent coffee and pastry because I feel like you'll need it. But go down that list of your team. Would you employ them again? And would you employ them into the same role? Because I think if you can't answer yes to both those questions, then you're going to need to make a change, right? I genuinely believe that we can do anything that we want to do at WOW. But I know we can only do that with the right people. And I'm a lot more excited to do that with the right people. It's a lot more fun. It's a lot more energizing and engaging. So I think, yeah, just have a look. And sometimes you'll find that you've got the right people. Maybe they're not in the right role, but that's a cool problem to solve. And we've done that before and it works really well. Sometimes the answer to both those questions is no. And I don't know, I can recommend a really good HR lawyer if that's what you need. But, you know, just rip off that plaster and do it, because the longer you leave it, the bigger a problem it becomes. And I'm not sure that's an activity for tomorrow morning first thing, but still encouraging you to do it.
So it's engaging your people. So it's asking them, do they understand what you're trying to do? What is your vision? Are they engaged in it? Can they tell you how they're contributing to that? And if not, what can you do about actually doing that and helping people to feel involved and engaged? Because that's how you create a successful company, is that everyone feels like they're part of that and they play a part in what they do, in what you're doing.
Great. Thank you. Right. Shall we answer some audience questions? We've got a few amazing ones here, actually, in a little bit of time. So I think this first one, I'll come to you, Mo. It says, it's from an anonymous person. So it says, we are committed to DE&I, but we're finding it tough to attract a diverse pool of recruits. How can we fix this?
You've got to really look at everything you're doing. So look at what you say about the company. What is it you do? How does that appeal to different kinds of people? Are they going to buy into that purpose of what you're doing? Look at what you're communicating. Look at what you're saying about the team. Look at your recruitment communications and really like critically look at them. It's very good to ask other people who are different to you to have a look at all of that as well. And you might be surprised at some of the feedback. I certainly give that feedback to people when we're working with companies. It's like, oh, if I saw that, I wouldn't apply for the job. So it's like really like look critically at all those things and then look at where you're looking for people. Are you looking in networks that are full of people that are very similar to the people you already have? Or are you doing anything about reaching out to different communities and doing different things? Really looking for different people that might want to come to your organization. So an example is, you know, if it's a tech company and you're not attracting enough women to apply for your roles, what are you saying about what it's like to work at the company? You know, what kinds of benefits do you have? What kinds of people are there now? What's it like to work there? What stories are you telling about that? What things are you supporting? So, a company we worked with a couple of years ago, we said to them, you're really struggling with this. One thing you could do is start supporting organizations like Girls That Code, because the pipeline of people needs to start much younger for things like girls being attracted into tech careers. But also, if you do that and you say you're doing that and talk about that, that would make people feel more compelled to work for you, because they would think, okay, they actually are doing something about this. So it's thinking like creatively about all those different things. And yeah, sadly, there isn't just one thing. There's no tick box thing you can do and it's fixed. You have to think about all those things and really take an introspective look at the whole organization and what you're saying about it.
Maybe it's one of those things where you just need to start, you know, like you just need to do something. And then once you do that one thing, it becomes onto the next one and onto the next one. Sometimes I find that's how we've done our coolest thing, by just doing something, giving it a go.
Yeah, definitely. Did you want to add?
Yeah, I was going to say that is what we say. So people are often scared of getting started and they don't know what to do. They think they're going to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. And that was actually why we wanted to write the book. We were like, if we can just give people loads of simple ways of getting started, then it will help people to do that.
Yeah, I love that.
Excellent. Thank you. So lots to get cracking with there. But like you said, Kelly, like just pick one thing. Nikki, I'm going to come to you with this one. How do you get the rest of your team talking about profit, not just being a sales money grabbing figure? What does a profit culture mean in practice?
There's a really fantastic, I don't know how you feel about Simon Sinek, but there's a great video, 1 minute, profit is fuel. That profit is there as a validity of a business to be able to exist. And it's there to make sure your business can continue. It's not the sole purpose of a business. I'd recommend anyone has a look at that. But also think about why we need profit. I never forget, we had a company meeting. We used to call it New News on a Friday. And one of the team said to me, why do we need to make a profit? And I nearly fell off my chair. And I said, okay, let's workshop that right now, shall we? So the 35 of us at the time said, why do we need to make a profit? And people were just volunteering what they thought profit was for. And a lot of it was to make the founders rich, etc. Not a lot, some of it was. But people were saying, oh, so we can, you know, develop our products, develop our services, put money into marketing, give pay rises. And once the team started thinking about it, it became really apparent that profit was necessary, absolutely necessary. And we talked about the fact that the business wasn't a charity. We didn't have time to go and fundraise to keep the business going. And it really cemented that profit was a good thing rather than a bad thing. And it was quite hard to take the feedback that, oh, profit is just there for you to go and buy flash car. I was like, not really, put my house on the line for this. But until you have that conversation with people, they're never going to know. So I think it's been very honest and maybe a little bit vulnerable about why profit's important. And lots of founders I talk to don't want to share profit, and I understand it. I totally get it. You don't have to share net profit, but sharing gross profit is a really healthy thing to do. I just wonder how many people in the room actually do share their gross profit with the rest of the business, because I promise you, it's really hard to create a profit culture without sharing what the profit is. And once you get through that boundary, things really start to change, and it can be very, very compelling to then have bigger conversations around profit.
Feels like it links into what you said earlier about rewiring. Actually, it's not a dirty word. We can talk about it and get stuff out of it together, right?
Absolutely. And then people become more commercial, which you really want them to be with clients. You don't just want to be delivering. You want to be talking to clients about value and what profit they're driving and how their margins help. And if you're not doing it within the agency, it's really hard to get people to have those conversations with clients. You kind of got to start with your own backyard.
Yeah, thank you. Kelly, I've got one for you. It says, you talk about ENPS. Is it the be-all and end-all of employee metrics? What else could we track?
So in there, it does quite a few other different metrics for us, like around engagement. And I feel like if we measure our engagement, it's a mark out of 10. Every Friday, Office Vibe sends me an email and tells me what our score is. And it's my worst email of every week, because I still have a panic every week. What is that score? But, you know, so at the moment, ours is 8.5 out of 10. Obviously, I always want it to be higher, always want it to be more. But it, for me, that's just really easy to understand. And I'm not, you know, a lot of people here know how much I love NPS, whatever, you know, client or employee. But what that engagement score is, it's just so easy. It's so tangible out of 10. And I know what I need to do to change that. And I can read the feedback and I can see what I want to do. So
yeah, so I think definitely like scoring like that can be really helpful. Retention can be a good indicator as well. And then also like how many employees recommend the company as an employer and like get their friends to apply for jobs there. That's another thing we often ask clients about as well, because it's quite a good indicator of like how much people believe in the organization.
Somebody did pick up on our neurodiversity chat, so I thought I'd just end on this question, and I'll come to you first, Mo, but if anyone wants to add anything, please do. He said, how do we best support neurodiversity in our agency, especially as it can be challenging to produce and deliver things in so many different formats or voices?
That's a huge topic to
get. I know.
A couple of minutes. So in terms of supporting people, I would say start by learning about it, and like everyone learning about it. So and that can open up lots of things, but can also help with lots of solutions and ways of doing things. So it can help with understanding. So so when we run a training course on Introduction to Neurodiversity, it has a bit at the end which says, what should I do if I think I'm neurodiverse? Because actually for a lot of people, it might make them think, well, perhaps that's why I've been finding this difficult. And then for people that are working alongside people, learning about those things can really help in how you work with people too. So if someone is asking lots of questions or asking for information in different formats or any one of those things, it doesn't necessarily mean they're being difficult. It could be that they need all of that information before they can actually get on with the task. And what we talk about with everything to do with diversity and inclusion, we say that what this is about is not taking anything away from anyone. It's actually making everything better for everyone. So if a website is made accessible, you've made a better website for everyone. If you send interview questions in advance to all candidates, you've made the experience better for everyone, but you also get better results from the interview process. So just there are just some quick examples, but there's so much more. It's a huge topic.
I think it's listening, as I think we're all saying, because there's a generation of agency leaders who grew up from school not talking about mental health, not talking about neurodiversity. It wasn't words in our vernacular. We just didn't come across them in the way that we do now. And it's about being open to listening to those conversations. And people are very happy to talk about mental health and neurodiversity. It'd be quite a challenge as a leader if it's not something you've been used to. So I think it's been porous. It's listening and having that empathy with someone that maybe you weren't used to and hasn't grown up with you. But just know that that's a thing and that's okay.
Thank you. Okay. I would continue having this conversation for at least the next 3 hours. I feel like we do need to wrap it up there, definitely. Please, can we have a massive round of applause for our wonderful panel?
Thank you for listening to the Beautiful Business Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. For more advice and practical tips on what it's really like to build a beautiful business, visit our content hub at wowco.uk/hub. Or check out the link in the show notes.